Hey, wonderfuls. Welcome to episode 384 of the JV Club with my guest and friend, Baron Vaughn. I have known Baron for many years, and it has been so fun and wonderful to see his star just rise and rise and rise. I am so grateful to those of you who were able to join up for Max Fun. I want to remind you that you can always become a member, whether or not it's the drive or not, but we're not here to talk about Max Fun Drive because that was last week. And four glorious weeks in total, and you are all wonderful, and we love you. So I'm excited for you to dive into this episode with this boy of summer, and I am recording this actually a few days early because my sweet and wonderful producer, Julian, is going to be off this week after Max Fun Drive for, I can only assume, a much-needed vacation. He works so hard, and I could not be more appreciative of him. I also could not be more appreciative of Chris Royce, who, as I have said in the past, was a listener who became a friend who became a coworker. He now runs, he designed and built the jvclub.org, which is a beautiful website. If you haven't had a chance to visit, I strongly encourage you to do so. I use it as a resource all the time. I'm like, who was it? Remember when I... And he's done such an amazing job. And he also runs the JV Club Twitter, which is the JV at the JV Club. And he is wonderful. And I think there are many of you who are listeners who know that I love talking to you and I love getting to know you. And in many cases, it has been so fun to build deeper relationships with you, whether it's collaborating on work stuff or just keeping in touch via friendships. I shout out to Shannon, who who has really become the sort of like Diana to my Anne. We've never met. We are pen pals. She is a listener to the show. That is how I know her at all. You're all the best. That's all. Listen to this episode. I'm getting out of here.
Might hear this drink stirring a little bit, and I apologize if that's the case.
I did hear. What are you stirring?
Me, Janet? Oh, you know. Me? Well, first of all, trouble. Am I right? That's what I'm stirring up.
No, big time.
Secondly, big time. A homemade iced oat milk latte with vanilla.
Like a vanilla extract, like from a little bottle of something of vanilla,
no.
I guess.
vanilla syrup. Out of.
Oh yes, mm-hmm. Wonderful.
Which I think is sometimes made of extract, depending on the syrup.
And is it a warm latte on this toasty day?
Or oat milk vanilla latte. Yes.
Beautiful, beautiful. That sounds very tasty. I do feel like I'm a person who's had more than one conversation about how delightful oat milk is. I'm not sure that's a good thing. I think it might be the opposite of a good thing, but
well,
I do like an oat milk.
I'm just waiting for the time where somebody comes forward with the research of like, it turns out oat milk is killing your grandma. You know, there's always something.
Yes.
You're like, this is good. This is a great alternative to what we were doing.
Yes.
Nope, it was worse. And then they so on and so forth with soy, then almond, oats next.
But at this point, like, all of those small things seem so cute. Like, oh, it's so cute. We found out that oat milk's deadly. But, like, it's been a year. So it's been a bit of a year.
It's been a weird year.
So I guess it just seems sweet and cute that you could just hey, it's simple.
But,
hey, stop drinking oat milk.
You know, you're
like,
actually...
We figured it out.
You're actually speaking to one of... What I am quickly learning is becoming one of my favorite things about learning history. American history, world history, right? Every country in the world, obviously, has had very significant events, whether they be literal revolutions or inventions or wars. But right before that thing happens, that big thing that changed everything forever, that's my favorite period. That's the period of every country becoming their worst and their pettiest. Usually.
Yes, that's right.
It's like, if you think about what we were doing before, say, 9/11, it's adorable what we were concerned about. Where everything was court TV. It was just post OJ, you know, sex scandals. Yeah. And maybe they got murdered and maybe they blah. It's like, isn't this crazy? And then 9/11 happens. It's like, what were we doing? Why were we looking at that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's, I want to say, I mean, I guess this is a big fancy French term for something that ostensibly you could argue is happening in mini or maxi versions all over, to your point, in different countries all the time.
Yes.
But it's a real fin de siècle. Ooh. Sort of scenario.
What does that mean?
Which is, you know, it's like, it's the sort of the end of an era, like, you know, the this was the 20s before World War One, or this was the, that's probably not true because World War One may have been going on before the 20s. I should go. I should go learn anything.
But again, this is all I've been doing the last couple years. So it's like, I feel like the last couple years has been, I feel like I've just turned into an old man. Like, I'm just like,
yeah.
I feel like there's an age where you at some point go, all right, what really happened during that Civil War? Let's see what Ken Burns had to say. I just want to learn about history for real, like not what I learned in school anymore and all.
For sure.
Are
you a person who felt like you remembered that much about what you learned in school? Because I did not. And I'm not a stupid person, but I certainly was like learning to test, I think.
See, and I was the opposite. I love learning. I've always liked learning. I would have been a good student if I cared. I did not care for homework. I did not care.
Yeah.
I was that kid that's kind of like, not that kid who's like, are we going to need to know this? I was that kid that was like, excuse me, yes, is there a point to regurgitating everything you told us back to you?
Right.
That was that kid.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just kind of like,
I get it.
I debate in class and make good conversations. I refused to do homework politically and ended up being a straight B student. But the thing is, now I'm like, I've always liked learning. I just never liked homework. So like learning about history and stuff like that, because even like World War One, which you just mentioned, right?
Yeah.
It's interesting to know. And of course, it's always like there's a breaking point. Every country has, because we don't know what's going on in every single damn country in the world. And then at some point, there's a breaking point. And that's when apocalypse means, I don't believe about apocalypse in like the biblical sense, like the skies will open and demons will shit in your mouth, that whole thing. That's not what I believe. I believe apocalypse is supposed to mean revelation, the unveiling, all will be revealed. Right. And any horrible, significant global crisis is in some sense an apocalypse. So it's like all of the dirty politics, corruption, or whatever the hell was happening in each of those countries before World War One was put on the table. Same with World War Two, same with the Civil War. All these secrets, all these backdoor deals, and all this crap comes to the surface. And that's what's definitely happening right now.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Absolutely. The most surface we've ever experienced. I can't believe I said, I'm still reeling over saying that the 20s had anything to do with World War One. Listen, people were bouncing back. If I recall, World War One was in the teens. But and then we moved into World War Two. I think it was like 1918 or something.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. 14 to 18.
No, you're right. I mean, nothing has felt, in our lifetime anyway, nothing has felt so raw and on the surface in such a profound way than this last year, and you know, to a certain degree the last several years. I'm gonna see your interest in history, because I feel that way as well, and I'm gonna raise it a, like, suddenly I only want to listen to audiobooks that are set in the turn of the century. Like, all of a sudden I'm a big historical fiction fan. And it's so transparent. Like the idea of like wanting to listen to an Agatha Christie murder mystery, guys, don't worry. I do know that she did not write in the turn of the century, but, like wanting to read something like by Wilkie Collins or, you know, or somewhat something that was written in, you know, the 90s, but is set in 1904. All of a sudden it feels very safe to, like, you know, be listening to people getting into horses and carriages on their way to try to solve a murder of an adorable street urchin in turn of the century New York. It feels very like, oh, no, you know, listen, this already happened. This fictitious thing that never happened is way behind me. So I don't have to be afraid of it. Everything's going to be just fine. And isn't it cool how they used to have those buses that were also drawn, that were also run by horses? Like there's something happening where I'm like the cliche of all cliches. I'm really enjoying hearkening back. Like, I remember someone saying that they enjoyed historical fiction when I was much younger, that was sort of like the kind of book they liked to read. And I remember thinking like, oh, you're an old person trapped in a young person's body.
Hmm. Well, what is the...
But now I'm just an old person trapped in a middle-aged person's body.
Or...
What an accomplishment.
You could just say, you're Janet.
That's right.
You. No judgment. But, you know, the thing is, and this is fascinating to me, by the way, I'm a big hidden messages kind of person, not like conspiracy theorist, but like it all connects, bro. Kind of, you know, surfing the wave of pollen into my nose. I don't even know what that means. I'm having some allergies today, so pollen's on my mind. Literally, probably I breathed it in.
It's in there. It's settled. A dust has settled on top of your brain.
On that frontal lobe, a flower.
Yeah,
the bees in my brain. But you know,
that's right.
I'm curious because. It's, you say the word safe. First of all, just a quick aside, it's funny that you you have almost like a tick in which you have to, you're like, guys, I know that World War II didn't happen during
the, I know. Like, I'll never, I'm gonna be trying to recover from that. I know. I'm gonna be trying to recover from that as if it's the most important thing I've ever done wrong.
Well,
for the rest of this conversation.
That's the voice of a person who's been fact checked and corrected too many damn times. It's like,
you get me.
You're dangling participle showing or whatever, you know. That's what people do to you.
That's right.
But I see you, your historical fiction in which you call quote unquote safe.
Mm-hmm.
And I raise you. I'm such a big fat theater person, and I'm becoming more and more less and less ashamed of it. I was going to say more and more less ashamed. I just wanted to piss off whoever it is that you're saying, guys, I know Agatha Christie. I know
great.
When she was alive. So I'm becoming less and less ashamed about it because I've learned so, it sounds so hack to say, but I've learned so much from, because when you, historical fiction, there's something about thinking about who these people were and not just the important events we saw in a book on this date.
Yes,
this happened. And
bring
then,
it to life for me.
Yes.
And bring it to life.
There's something interesting about that. That's why we like biopics. That's why we like historical movies anyway. So,
yeah.
And in a historical, you know, fiction in terms of like a novel or something like that, then these people can go really deep. You know, I mean, isn't that freaking Gore Vidal? That's his whole thing. It's his whole thing. So it's like, I'm curious, because you say it's safe, but in a sense, especially when you're learning about the manners, because I think the biggest thing that stands out to me are the things that remain relevant, are the truths you might learn about how people behave or make a decision that you're like, oh my God, that's still, this is 100 years ago this was written, and that still applies. So my question to you is, what are those things, Janet, that you see when you listen to what you say is safe that you think still apply?
Gosh, what do I think still applies? I mean, because I'm also, you're right. I mean, wanting it to feel alive and wanting it to feel relatable is certainly a thing that makes sense. But, you know, the safe part comes from, you know, like, look at how the worry of this time was this new big thing or this terrible disaster of a thing, which, you know, no one's saying it wasn't, mm-hmm. but the idea that there is an other side to it, that, you know, that there is this sort of, could be what feels like an apocalypse or, you know, is on some level. And then there's something on the other side of that isn't catastrophic, you know?
Mm-hmm. Now I see. I see your historical kit. Your historical fiction.
Yeah. And yeah. I enjoy that.
When I forget when Agatha Christie actually was, but she was more 30s, wasn't she?
Yeah, I think she was 30s and 40s.
She wrote plays as well. So between World War I and the 30s is one of my favorite TV shows. It's called Peaky Blinders on Netflix.
I've never watched Peaky Blinders.
Now, the thing about that show, I don't want to get too damn deep about it, but it's a perfect example of what you're saying being done well, I think.
Yeah.
Because you're following these characters. Now, I've only seen the pilot of Downton Abbey. Have you seen that?
Yeah, I watched Downton Abbey.
I've only seen the pilot. But the whole thing is, oh my God, the Titanic sank. That's how this whole show starts, is that they're all waking up like,
I forgot.
Was it Jan on that? You know, like, and then suddenly all of these people that were in line for these titles and deeds and shit are dead. And that's what the whole point of that show is that people are suddenly getting shit that they weren't supposed to have. Right. Yeah. And I was like, cool. Now, Peaky Blinders is similar, right? In a sense, it takes place after the end of World War One, in which all these people, these Brits in Birmingham, served together. And it's like they're bonded because of this war in a way in which the laws of their own land no longer apply to them. And that's why everyone is crooked. They had to play a game between countries. So now it's like, a gangster, a policeman, we all want to make money. Let's just shut the fuck up and when I kill someone, just hide it. Kind of a thing.
Yep.
So they become this band of brothers, to borrow a war movie phrase. But I guess I'm just thinking about, like, it's all about resources. That's what I always come back to.
No, it's true. Can I ask one very rudimentary question?
Yes, please.
Is there a character named Peaky Blinders?
No. The Peaky Blinders.
Okay, that's good news. That's good news. Really good.
Do you want to know what that means, or do you want to wait?
Is it a real spoiler for me to find out?
No, not really.
Okay.
It's the name of their gang.
Oh, why did you tell me? I wanted to be surprised.
What? I thought you said you wanted to hear it.
I'm totally kidding. The idea that I would want to be surprised by the gang's name.
I can't see your face, Janet, and you're a very,
very
good
sad.
Voice actor.
I know. I'm very sorry I'm so skillful. I just can't. I can't apologize enough for how skillful I am. I mentioned Wilkie Collins. I listened to this audiobook that...
Now, I'll say I'm not familiar with Wilkie Collins.
I wasn't at all either, but this podcast, Criminal, has the creator and host named Phoebe Judge decided during the pandemic to also offer a free podcast in which she reads a chapter a day of a sort of classic mystery.
Awesome.
So I think she started with Proro. So, you know, we got, I think. But then she did a book called The Moonstone by some guy named Wilkie Collins that I had never really heard of. And then it turns out he was like a really good friend of Charles Dickens. But I really liked it. It was very funny. And it sort of had that Dickensian, like, you know, sort of seeing ahead of, like, he was very progressive for his time. And so there was a lot of, you know, him sort of revealing his leanings towards like socialism and, you know, sort of the upper class being preposterous.
Yeah.
He's got nestled into these mysteries. So I listened to this one called The Woman in White that Sir Ian Holm narrated.
Oh
my God. I had just finished listening to it. I think he was waiting to die for me to have finished his previously recorded decades earlier book.
So it makes sense.
But he, speaking of theater, I want to take it back to your unapologetic love of theater. This is such a cliche to talk about also, but like those Shakespearean trained British actors, I mean, when you really take apart some of the stuff that he is saying in the book, in terms of the amount of commitment that he gives to each word, it's ridiculous, but it's so wonderful.
I really
hate that I can't do that, but I feel like it's very specific to like a certain kind of training. But he kind of, there's a lot of like whispering, like when he gets to a point where something is ready, it's not to be believed. including him saying, because it is a sort of, you know, eerie mystery, the title of the book gets said, and I sort of was walking around while I was listening to it for days. I was walking around trying to work in a way to end every sentence.
Yeah.
Like, and what before my eyes should appear, but the woman in white. Because that's really does this like stage whisper, like he's gripping something his eyes are wide and it does that wonderful thing of like tickling me and making me laugh so hard, yet also giving me the goosebumps that he is hoping it will give you, like to be able to sort of be in and out of the moment and both are delightful. I just can't get enough of it.
You know, back when I was in New York, I used to hear a lot of New York actors, especially older ones, because it was pre-podcasts, right? But people had books on tape. So sometimes these actors, especially if they actually were in the industry in which they read books on tape, they discussed who's really good at it. And sometimes it was people they know, and they'd be like, oh, did you hear Jim Cummings on the new one, blah, 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 you know, or whatever. Or Jim Dale or somebody. I forget the guy's name. But I always heard legends about Ben Kingsley. Legends about Ben Kingsley never getting notes, that he walks in there and he reads it and it's like, you know, he's like anybody gets notes. He's like, it's like, right. Yeah, do that a little faster or a little slower or you swallowed the B when you said B.
Right.
But I just heard the, I always used to hear these stories about like, oh man, because apparently I haven't heard of his books on tape, but you know, he's got that power too.
Oh,
but
sure.
Like they were talking about like, oh man, I always heard he got no notes. Like a producer, a friend of mine was there and they were like, they were just floored with everything he brought. And it makes sense because it is part of the training of a Shakespearean actor, because all these people you're talking about are RADA people, right? Royal Academy of Dramatic Art. And so the kind of training that they do in terms of Shakespeare, which I'm very familiar with.
Indeed.
It teaches a care for words that is unlike anything I have ever, because Shakespeare invented so many words.
So crazy.
So it's like this feeling that this audience that's there to hear this play has literally never heard these words before. They know the pieces of it, but then it's like you're introducing a turn of phrase. I mean, you've seen comedians or musicians or rappers put together a bunch of things into a new phrase, and it just captures you and you go, whoa, what a perfect way.
Yes, yes.
That's how Shakespeare was, all of the sentences are like that.
Can I say that I now suddenly really wish that you were teaching Shakespeare to young people? You'd be so good at it.
No, it is one of my plans. I think that I think that Shakespeare is mistaught in general across the world, especially in English-speaking language. I don't think people. I think the British teach and do Shakespeare worse than anyone else. That's not even a
That's
joke.
Great.
There's brilliant,
of course.
I there's 10% of them are really good at it, and the other 90 are like, well, I got the accent, and they are horrible.
Okay, we're going to take a break. I will be back after a word from our wonderful buddies at Maximum Fun.
There's nothing quite like sailing in the calm international waters on my ship, the SS Biopic.
Avast! It's actually pronounced biopic.
No, you dingus! It's biopic!
Who the hell says that? It's biopic. Because
it's the words for biography and picture.
All right, that is enough. Ahoy, I'm Dave Holmes. I am the host of the rebooted podcast formerly known as International Waters, designed to resolve petty but persistent arguments like this. How? By pitting two teams of opinionated comedians against each other with trivia and improv games, of course. Winner takes home the right to be right.
What podcast be this?
It's called Troubled Waters, where we disagree to disagree!
Were you a theater nerd in high school? Was that a thing that you did give a damn about?
Janet, I went to a performing arts high school.
Okay, I would have put my white gloves on if I knew I was gonna be speaking to royalty.
Well, I am a baron.
Oh, that's true. God damn it, Janet.
Thou knewst titles were involved. I went to Performing Arts High School in Las Vegas, Nevada, which is where I grew
up. Wait, hold on. Yeah. Everything's changed.
Yep.
I'm actually going to put my white gloves back in the drawer.
You should, because things are about to get dirty. You're going to get covered with sand. On second thought, take the gloves out. You better protect your hands. Okay,
oh,
I'm sorry.
You're so right. My gloves are back on.
What were you going to ask Janet, though?
It's clear to me that you were a theater nerd, as you did go to a performing arts high school in the theater capital of the United States, Las Vegas, Nevada.
Vegas is not the, yes. When people come to Vegas, they're like, Vegas, you could smell the theater in here.
That's right. You have not seen Hamlet until you've seen it at a buffet.
Yes, done by showgirls. Because they let you eat ham while you're watching Hamlet. To beef or not to beef.
See?
All right, I'm so
See?
Sorry.
See how we just invented a new hotel with a very special feature?
I'm telling you, for 20 years, that's exactly how hotels were invented. With the conversation that went
there
exactly
you go.
Like we
Yeah,
had.
Hey, wouldn't it be funny if
they
that's
were
it. We're going to do it. It's going to be... It will. There will be a pirate ship in the front.
How
was it? Was it a good school? Did it have money? I guess that's a good question. Was it a public school that had money because Nevada does okay? Or
well, okay. There's a lot of different elements to it. I mean, one, when I went there, it was only 3 years old. So when I was a freshman, the group of seniors? Oh no, maybe it wasn't the group of seniors. Yeah, when I was a sophomore, the group of seniors that graduated when I was a sophomore were the first group of people who went all to this high school all 4 years.
Okay.
I don't remember exactly how it started or how it happened or why it existed, but it was okay. Now they have a lot more money than we had when I was going there, when it was kind of being invented still.
Right.
The quality of stuff that we were doing was pretty good. I mean, I think that, like, as far as community theater in Vegas went, like, our high school could compete with that level of quality, of level of production and performance. But that's...
Yeah.
But I'm talking about community theater, not professional theater. And, of course, a lot of kids or dancers or singers or musicians that went to my high school have gone on to have very fruitful careers in all different aspects of the industry. But, like, it was very strange because, first of all, it's Vegas, and Vegas is a horrible place. The worst place to grow up. Whatever happens in Vegas stays in Vegas in the brains of children who watched all these mofos come there and do it in my backyard. So, and I'm like, oh, wow, that's disgusting. I'll always remember. But,
yeah.
But it was a really interesting environment and very different than the rest of Vegas, because Vegas is a relatively conservative place, even though it's relatively diverse. But, like, I mean that, like, people are very homophobic, you know, or very, at least when I was growing up. And so I went to a high school, which I think is very unusual for most people, where it was actually, not only was it okay to be gay, it was cool to be gay. I went to the only high school where kids who were definitely only straight would say they were bi-curious to become popular. I went to the only high school in America. Now that's normal. But when
I was going
to high school. So it's kind of like being amongst this group of sometimes, very talented kids who could all do things in very different ways. And we had a language for this stuff that a lot of kids do not have. Of course, and then I went to theater school. I went to Boston University to study acting. All that said, it's kind of ridiculous. The end. It was all kind of ridiculous. But I'm glad that I did it. But I'm only now, as a person who's, you know, middle-aged, starting to understand all these things that I learned from back then, because when I was 18 and you walk into a class and someone's like, hey, you, 18-year-old, his streetcar named Desire. Makes sense of the most complicated shit ever written by... Excuse me, you look like you have no life experience. The Crucible. Figure it out. Yes, you. Yeah. This is the first time you haven't lived in your mother's house? All right. Here's Waiting for Godot. Perhaps you'll recognize it. By the way, it's Godot. If you've been saying Godot until now, you're out of here. Like, we don't know what the hell we're talking about.
Yeah. That's really true. It's really interesting, isn't it? That's, I think there are some schools that, kind of to your point about the other stuff too, with like theater schools and stuff, that they focus more on like age appropriate sort of, you know, well, this is your, now we're going to do these plays that are like these contemporary plays about, or like Rent, or, you know, contemporary plays, which seems like it's all, that's all still huge, huge concept stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
But stuff that isn't maybe, you know, that, to your point, it's like not Death of a Salesman, you know?
Rent is about a bunch of queer people who, a lot of them are HIV positive or living with AIDS, right? That's not, yeah. That is a, it's a pretty groundbreaking play in the sense that it normalizes that kind of a life, right? But right. In high schools across America where people were still like, we can't talk about this stuff, they were changing Rent left and right, but all the kids were obsessed with it. You know, play is why, for a lot of kids that I did know that were gay, that play is why they came out. You know, like that play was like, oh shit, this is, we can sing and be on stage. That's cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Rent.
Well, yeah. And
solo
in that
recreation.
Way, yeah.
I just, there's
it has a different.
The high school edits. Yeah.
High school edits, I bet. Oh my God. I my only version of that I can think of is doing Grease and like having to change some words that, like, you know, if we, I don't even remember what they were. Oh, I do. What, Rizzo, when Rizzo sings "Look at me, I'm Sandra D, lousy with virginity," we had to change it to "lousy with my purity."
Ah, it doesn't even, it's not even, it's worse.
Yeah.
The lyrics are the lyrics.
It's saying the exact same thing. So you haven't really changed anything except made it clunkier.
Yeah, I remember chorus line. There's a song called Tits and Ass.
Sure.
And I didn't know that for a long time. I thought the song was called This and That. Because that's what that's what I heard in high school. This and That. And when I saw the movie, I was like, whoa, they really Hollywooded that song. I thought it was This and That. They just made it really obvious.
Oh, God. That's great. That's great. Were you known as the sort, like, did you have sort of a thing that you were especially good at, or that everyone knew you were passionate about within the realm of the performing arts high school? Was it like, oh, you know, Baron, you, well, if we're doing this, we got to get Baron to be blah, blah, blah. Or were you sort of a jack of all trades?
I fashioned myself a jack of all trades because I was finding a reason to be involved in any production that was happening in some way, even if I wasn't in cast. You know, yeah. I was like, I'll come and just work on the set, or I'll stage manage, or I'll, you know, coach scenes, or, you know, I just wanted to be involved somehow. But
yeah.
I became known as the master of, like, walk-ons. Like, I never got cast in a lead until my senior year, but they always put me in some interesting ass weird supporting role so I could do like an established bit that would break the tension of whatever the hell was it. Like, I could come out and go like blah blah blah, 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 you know, sometimes I had literally one line. Sometimes it was like, I remember a lot of different plays. Like, there's a play called The Foreigner. Have you ever heard of this play?
Heard of, never read.
There's a whole thing in the end of it where the Klan comes in. And,
ooh.
Exactly. And the director of the play thought it would be interesting.
Oh, sure.
If all the Klansmen were played by black people. Like that because you wouldn't see our skin. You would just see that we're in these hoods. And then there would be one point where somebody goes, white power. And that was me. So I was like, I literally did a black power fist and went, white power. And it got the most insane laugh because people were like, wait a minute, there's a, what the hell? Because when we came on the stage, people gasped. They didn't know that, like, oh shit, there's like clans people in this play? I thought this was a comedy. And then when I go, white power, and people are like, oh my God. Like, but that's, I don't even know if it's the most problematic thing ever, but like shit like that was the stuff I was doing. Just anything that was the most inappropriate where I could be on stage in any way, I was up for it.
Uh-huh. What did you get to do when you did get to be a lead in senior year? What did you get to do?
I played Fagin and Oliver.
There it is. I bet that was really fun. That's like the Miss Hannigan of Oliver in terms of like juicy, funny, weird song, you know, like very character-y.
Yes, yes. Yes, and I had one solo song, and I think that besides all of, no, there's like a couple characters have solos, but like Fagin only has one solo, and it was like reviewing the situation. That was the name of the song.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah, that's a fun song.
It's very song, and it was very fun, and it was like, it was in high school the closest that I felt to doing stand up because I was on a stage alone with this particular piece, and I knew I could like develop laughs in it. I was, you know,
yeah.
I was in high school, you know, so it was as good as I could be at that time. But like, I thought it was my crowning achievement, especially because my little sisters came and it was like, I got to like steal the show. And then my little sisters were like, wanted to give, you know, they're like, ah, brother, my brother, you're so, and that was like the best thing in the world to me.
And you were like, you're dead to me. My family means nothing. I need to meet with my fans.
Get these rough fans off
me. You get me at home. Yeah, you get me at home. Get these people out of here. I need to talk to these fans.
Get out of here, pleb.
What if they were like, listen, there's just some material in Oliver that we're going to need to change. It's instead of got to pick a pocket or two, it's going to be like, got to give a locket or two because we don't want to promote stealing.
We cannot promote crime. So we've decided to promote the opposite of it, which is giving. So got to give a locket or two. We've changed the plot of Oliver in which
the entire plot
place things. They place lockets in people's pockets.
Yeah.
And that's what this play is now about. Anyway.
What a beautiful, sweet story that would be. I'm angry that that's not available to me right now to watch.
Well, Dickens was no Wilkie Collins, am I right?
I'll tell you something. You know what you're not going to see going through the regular crowds like they're just a normal person? Is the woman in white.
The woman in white. Oh, that's amazing.
You'll never
see amazing.
The woman in white.
I definitely got to listen to that now.
Oh,
by the way,
so good.
This Wilkie Collins stuff reminds me of another thing that I like that happened before the pandemic, which is in terms of books, music, movies, all these things that were unsung or previously unreleased or didn't sell, like books that didn't sell in the 60s that were brilliant, but because they didn't sell, nobody ever reprinted them. And then suddenly people are like, oh, look at this book over here that we never really gave any attention to. And these are authors and you know, it's the same with movies and music and even TV shows. Where people are like, put the pilot of Cop Rock up on YouTube, or, you know, like all these legendary shows where we're like, we can kind of see previously unreleased material where we kind of see those times that they were released or they were written in a new light.
Yeah.
Where we go like, oh, people were talking about these and that issue then. They were ahead of their time and that's why no one got this. That's been fascinating. So you're talking about like a contemporary of Dickens who... A lot of people, I've never heard of that person.
Also, it's just a cute name. Who knows? Who knows more than that? Wilkie Collins. Don't want to know anymore. Don't want to be disappointed. Wilkie Collins. and the woman in white. Did you have that kind of, this was more true for me in college, the theater scene. Mm-hmm. The theater scene. Please give me a break, Janet. The theater department was very incestuous in kind of a delightful way. Like it was incestuous in the sort of way that was, you know, everybody just kind of ended up dating each other. And so I think in the long run, there was just sort of an acceptance of like, well, I mean, yeah, you're going to have to see this person like, you know, necking. Yeah, I said it. With someone else, you know, because that's, you know, it's very sort of insular and we like it that way. And there was drama, but I think, pun intended, I guess, but there was drama, but there was also like a sort of acceptance of that. Was your high school like that?
Oh, definitely. I mean, we're all drama freaks. You know, live to have feelings. That's our whole...
I'm so embarrassed.
That's our whole thing. It's like, oh, what if I get to feel everything all the time? Is basically what drew us to doing this crap. So people... Some people are just drama queens where they have to be making up, you know, things or pursuing, like, difficult situations or whatever so they can always have something to be complaining or talking about. And that you know, I mean, that's still true today in the profession that we work in, as we both know. But, like, the incestuous kind of stuff, I didn't really... I know it was happening around me, but I was very rarely invited. That's the way I'll say it.
Oh, no. Wait, were you dating at all in high school?
In high school, yeah. I mean, I had two serious girlfriends in high school, basically. I dated some girls in between, but really I had like two long-term girlfriends.
I'm glad you said long-term because I was imagining that they were both just very studious and very serious and humorless.
We only met in the library, so that way... So that way, anytime we decided we wanted to talk, someone would shush. No, I guess I dated both of them for a year and a half. That's long in terms of high school.
That is long. No, that's very long. And you went? Did you kind of just go one from the other? No.
No, there was judgment. There was a long in between. There was like a.
How mature?
Well, it wasn't what I wanted. No. In high school, you know, I don't know. I was never really stressed about being single because I never thought that I would have a girlfriend in the first place. So having had a girlfriend after it didn't work out, which of course I did not take well because I was a boy in high school. But after that, I was like, well, I don't have to have another girlfriend in high school. Like, I've done it.
Right. That makes sense.
Cool. A girl liked me and she liked me enough to kiss me. What else can I ask for? And then I had another girlfriend, luckily.
And were they both in the theater department?
Yes, they were.
Well, I guess I have to say, wait, so when you say performing arts school, does that mean, because you still were learning other stuff. So it wasn't like, was it like a fame type situation? Were you, or did you still have like, and then we had math class, and then we had...
Absolutely. It wasn't a conservatory, you know. It was just that, like, the way that we did it is we had 8 periods. Right. And 2 of these periods would be your block, which meant that whatever your major was, theater, dance, painting, you know, choir, band, orchestra, German, whatever your right. major was, because there was foreign language was one of the majors. So on Monday,
I felt so cool using the term major as a high schooler.
Yes, absolutely. What's your major?
I'm majoring in.
Yes, exactly. Not a lot of high school. And then when I talk about high school, I was like, yeah, I majored in theater. And people are like, what the hell are you talking about? What are you talking about?
Are you an alien in human skin? What do you mean? You've misspoken. Yeah. You've revealed everything majoring in high school.
Set phasers to none. And then they zap me and suddenly I'm like, back in the habit.
That's right.
So that's the dumbest pun I've ever made in my life. But, you know, a sister can act. But what the heck was I talking about? Oh, yeah. So we'd have math. We'd have all our regular classes. And then Tuesday and Thursdays was odd, 1, 3, 5, 7. Wednesday and Friday was evens, 2, 4, 6, 8. So say your 7th and your 8th period were theater. That meant that every single day you ended in a theater class.
Yes. Got it. Great major. Did you have a sense when you were there that, you know, you say now, you sort of talk about the Las Vegas maybe not being the most fun place to grow up. Did you know that then? Like, did you have a sense of humor about it then and sort of go like, well, once I leave this hellhole?
Not really, because the thing about Vegas is that there, at least for me, I never had a sense of what Vegas actually was about. And it's such a weird, almost like, because Vegas doesn't really have an identity. But as a high schooler, you can't put your finger on the lack of an identity.
Mm.
So it wasn't until I became an adult, you know, and had children that I started to realize, like, how much I hated Vegas. Like, all these habits and things that I have that came from growing up in a city that was too hot to walk around. And you know, it just has no real sense of community. There's no, I didn't grow up in a place where, you know, you knew your neighbors or anything like that. My mom didn't know any of the parents of kids I went to high school with. Vegas was kind of like that, where it was just, everyone was very much separated. And it's a driving culture, horrible traffic. But again, it's a factory town, and the factory is the gaming industry.
Right.
And it's just kind of like, I look back and I go, wow, I hate that there is, Vegas was made to impersonate every place that has a personality.
Right. It's so true. It's like the talented Mr. Ripley of cities.
Oh my God, that's absolutely correct. And there's something sinister about it.
Yeah.
And I was Kate Blanchett being like, what's going on with you, Matt Damon? You know, that's what was happening.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, listen, I feel like we've had some major, major revelations. And I'm not just talking about your major of theater in high school. Have you gotten into any of the, I'm actually going to sit 6 feet, 6 to plus feet apart at in someone's backyard socializing?
No.
Yeah, me neither, really.
No. It's just too much of a risk. We're supposedly high risk or whatever. She's got really bad asthma.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, we just don't want to take any chances.
Yeah.
But like, so we have gone out for walks, you know, obviously as we learn more about the virus, we adjust accordingly. But like, you know, we're not going to lie. I don't know. I don't really care about anybody more.
Right. No, no.
No offense to the rest of the world.
No, that's the right thing to say. That's the right thing to say. Well, listen, I had a barbecue. About 60 people came over. I said, don't wear masks.
Get the hell out of here. Man, those COVID parties. Oh, man. Ooh. I'm sad for the death to come. I'm not even sad. I'm sad about the death that's already happened, but I'm sad about the death to come. This is quite horrifying. But what are you supposed to do? And you know what, Janet? Here's my weird little nugget of hope that I keep. Like when I'm talking about all these messed up things that have happened in the world, when we're talking about all these horrible global events, crises, et cetera, et cetera. So much interesting art and comedy, film, plays, books, you know, thinkers come out of each of those eras.
Yeah.
And that's the thing we have to look forward to, is when we are all trying to figure out how to process a world in which this thing just happened.
Right.
And we're already doing that, you know? Like, even just this, every day, like, even just when we got on with each other and it was like, how are you? And it's like, that, how are you, used to have an automatic answer of fine.
Yeah.
I think we just have to accept the disappointed sigh as the new by rote knee-jerk response to how are you.
Yeah.
Just like, ugh. And that's we should just accept that that's what that's going to be.
Yeah.
That's the new normal. And that's the place where we're going to make some interesting, we're going to have some interesting conversations from that place.
That's right.
Emotionally.
That's right. Because you have, the sigh is the easiest way also to, it's open-ended enough that you sort of, I feel like what it's come to contain are like multiple sentences. Like the sigh, typically I feel that the sigh contains definitely the sentence, I mean, I'm lucky, ... Right? There's like this, like the sigh, the sigh definitely contains a like, look, it allows you, I think, to skip past the other many regular things that we're all saying, or that many of us who are lucky enough to say them say, you know, well, we're okay. You know, we feel very lucky because, you know, we're healthy. We have, you know, I'm okay. Like all of those things, but also, you know, you're saying all of those things, but also maybe you're not okay, even though you know you should be more okay emotionally than other people who are less okay because they have it worse off on some level or other than you. You know what I mean? Like, it's just this bundle that the heavy sigh, you can sort of actually feel the weight, the physical weight of the heaviness of what the sigh has tucked inside it, like a pinata of just wonderful candy, confusing sadness and hope.
I mean, but that's, yes, exactly. But that's where, that's where invention happens.
Yeah.
You know, but it's also kind of like, it really is like we just contain multitudes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I guess that's it.
Yeah.
All of these things can happen at the same time.
Absolutely.
And I think that, obviously, look how much we were taking for granted. I think it is important to realize that when you are fortunate, because that hopefully will motivate you to, you know, create some kind of world where more people can be as fortunate or whatever the hell.
Agreed.
You know, I'm trying to be like inspirational in some kind of way, but you know, it's in the collective consciousness. It's unhealthy for anybody, regardless of how directly or indirectly, you know, involved they are in everything that's happening. It's just on everyone's minds. That's just we're living in a world of nonstop anxiety.
Yeah.
Whether it be about this pandemic, whether it be about the state of, you know, race relations, whether it be about global warming, aka climate change,
right?
Aka the big hot, you know, yeah. Whatever. Just like these things they affect us, even if they don't affect us. But it's just kind of like we're all stressed.
Yeah,
we're all stressed. We're all vibrating.
Yeah,
and you know what? That's okay.
Yeah.
We can't feel good all about everything all the time. And if you do, you're a psychopath.
Oh, it's time for a quick break. I will be back after a word from our friends at Maximum Fun.
I can't hear myself, but I'm a consumer.
These are real podcast listeners, not actors. Hey, thanks for coming. Here's a list of descriptors. What would you choose to describe the perfect podcast?
I mean, vulgarity.
Dumb. Definitely dumb.
And like, right here, this one, meritless.
What if I told you there was a podcast that did have all of that?
No.
Jordan, Jesse, Go. And it's free.
Jordan, Jesse, Go?
Jordan, Jesse, Go.
Jordan, Jesse, Go. A real podcast.
Well, I'm going to segue into the final portion of, I think I said portion. It's kind of sound like I put an extra W and there aren't any W's in portion. So that's one too many. The portion of the podcast where we do create a little world of our own that's tailored to your likings. So I'm going to play this MASH game with you, Mansion, Apartment, Shack, House. Very mature game in which, have you ever played it or do you know it?
No.
Okay. It's a situation in which I'm going to ask you for three choices. You're just going to have to respond to my questions of these categories. I'm going to go like, you know, give me three things you'd like to blank. And then at the end, we're going to do this whole process of elimination and you will have this 100% guaranteed alternate universe / fictional life / future.
I like it.
So, and mansion, apartment, shack, and house, one of those things is what you'll end up with. And that's why it's called MASH. So for the first category, I would like you to give me, this is age, gender, race, all of that stuff just sort of disappears into the ether for this production, this wonderful production that you are going to get to be in of a play, doing a role that you love or would love to take on, that, you know, don't, it's not even going to be like, and you're going to be doing 8 shows a week, honey, so you're going to be tired as hell. This is like the best part about performing in theater, even if it's just like a one-off. Three plays and the respective roles that you would like to take on with zero limitations.
One is, I've always wanted to play Walter Lee Younger in the play A Raisin in the Sun by Lorraine Hansberry. It's one of the great roles, one of the great plays. Then I would also love to play, I'd love to play Brutus in Julius Caesar.
Great.
Honestly, I'd love to do Brutus and Cassius, like a kind of a Philip Seymour Hoffman, John C. Reilly doing True West, where whoever's playing Cassius, we switch roles every week.
Oh, sure.
That's what's going to happen in that Julius Caesar.
Love it.
And then the third play, that's an interesting ass play. There's so many weird, interesting plays. I am a big fan of weird stuff. So let's go with, I already mentioned it, Waiting for Godot. Waiting for Gal Gadot. And I will play, I always forget, there's one high energy and one's low energy. Either of those roles, again, like a John C. Reilly.
A flip-flop.
And
yeah I'll give you the flip-flop.
Dee Dee and Go-Go. Yeah, Dee Dee and Go-Go. Those are the two roles.
Okay.
So those are okay answers?
Yes, those are beautiful answers, my friend. Beautiful answers.
Yeah.
Next category, three places in this world that you, whether you've been there or not, the idea of maybe having a little getaway place appeals to you. And we're going to pretend like we can just sort of teleport you there. So travel is not an issue.
That currently exists right now.
Yes. Well, I'm interested to say, I'm going to say, not necessarily, because now I'm interested to know what that might open up for you.
Of places of all history?
Sure.
Perhaps we shouldn't.
Well, watch this out, because I'm probably going to lob a time travel question at you if we don't do it here. So,
okay. So no time travel. Let's take
great.
A time travel out.
One at a time. Love it.
We only have so much time. Okay. Three places I would like to go in the world.
And we're going to give you, it's going to be like your little getaway home. This is going to be where your mansion, apartment, shack, or house ultimately is.
Yeah, and I'm also going to ignore the current political climate of any place in the world.
Yes, indeed. Sounds good.
Just the place I think is interesting, regardless of the politics.
Makes sense.
Well, one, I'm very, and hopefully I will do this, I'm very, very, I've become more and more curious about Ghana, the country of Ghana. And there's a city, Accra, which is the capital, I think the biggest city. Seems like a really interesting place. And it would be interesting to have a getaway home there. Then I love like green, lush sort of forest kind of places as well. Because Ghana, like Accra is kind of like a really cool, I hear it compared to places like Prague or Berlin.
Oh, nice.
You know, where it's like, it's a really progressive urban, you know, city, and people have an interesting style and the architecture is supposed to be, it's just a really cool city.
Awesome.
But in terms of like places that are outside of a city, I was like that kind of like woodsy, foresty, mountain cliffy, lush green. And I always think of places like I always think of like places like Ireland. And I guess that there's places in Canada that have the same feel, like Newfoundland and stuff like that. Although I hear that stuff is really cold.
You don't have to be there that time of year.
That's true. Also Vancouver Island. Whoa. Yeah. If you've never been there, man, this is some beautiful stuff.
Yeah.
And then I've heard New Zealand again, all these lush green kind of places. But for this one, I think I'm going to go with, I think I'll go with like Ireland.
Okay, great.
Somewhere green, lush.
Great.
That's a little off the beaten path in Ireland. In Ireland.
In Ireland. Great.
In Ireland. That's the worst accent I've ever done. So one more place, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so I've talked about a city. I've talked about a forest. And then I think there's something to... I'm really curious about, well, I'm really fascinated by like places like in the Middle East, the Mediterranean, I guess. All that stuff is really beautiful to me, and I'm curious about the long histories of cultures, like Iran, Iraq, Turkey, Syria, you know, stuff like that. But like, right, obviously, you know, things aren't the best in a lot of those places.
But we said we would remove all of that, so.
Yes, I know. Well, those places are very fascinating and beautiful to me.
Yeah.
But I think I would want to be somewhere that's a little, maybe like more like jungle meets beach. And I think that that's like somewhere that's like in South America.
Okay. Wow. What a misdirect. I really felt like we were going towards something. And then you did a very quick 180, not a 180, but you did like a little swift swerve.
Well, those places, like, again, like when I'm even talking about like Greece, I'm talking about Greece and Turkey and those places that actually have coastline to the Mediterranean Sea.
Yep.
You know, even Northern Africa, like, you know, Morocco and all that stuff.
Listen, I'm not judging you. I enjoyed the surprise shift over to South America.
Or Spain. Yes. But I would want to find a place like that in South America. I'm not really familiar enough with South America to say what I think is a place that's like that.
But
so I, you know what? I'm going to stick with.
Oh boy.
The Mediterranean, and let's just say someplace in Turkey.
Great.
On the beach.
Great. Okay, I've never done this category before. It is being created on the spot expressly for you. There's probably something deeply wrong with this category, so I apologize in advance. But because you did that horrible Irish accent, which I loved, I am going to gift you with... not a language that you speak, but when you speak English, what other accent that isn't the one you have would you like to have? Three accents that you would speak with when you're just speaking English to people.
Fascinating. Well, I do like the British accent.
Okay.
And I like all the variations of the British accent. You know, we talk about Peaky Blinders.
Yeah.
But I also love like how somebody like Idris Elba talks.
Yep.
I watched a little of that show, I May Destroy You, the new Michaela Cole
show. I'm so
show.
Excited to watch that show. I hear such amazing things.
I'm not going to talk to you about it.
Okay. I mean, you already basically ruined the entirety of Peaky Blinders for me by telling me that was the
Peaky
name
Blinders,
of their game.
I'm so sorry. So I do like that British. Kind of like, oi, why are you sighing to me?
Yeah. Yep.
I might. Oh, you fly guy-ish kind of thing.
Great. That's number one. What's
the oven enough? The oven enough, mate. So this is actor Lenny James. Again, he was on Walking Dead, another British guy who has got an interesting voice.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's the first accent, right?
Yeah, great.
So speaking English with an accent.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it doesn't have to be an English speaker, you know what I'm saying? But like, if you like the way, you know, a French person speaks English, like, you know what I mean? It could be.
Yeah, I like that British accent, but like the like a kind of a London, rougher neighborhood sort of London accent. Then I think there's something I think is really cool about the Brazilian accent when one is speaking English, because it sounds like a little French Canadian and a little French and a little, it sounds like a bunch of different things to me, and I cannot nail it.
I feel the same. I agree with you, and I feel the same way about Israeli accents when people like,
I often
think people who are Israeli are actually French. There's like something there that I totally mishear.
No, I get that. I think there's a lot of relations between those two countries too. Yeah. Like I feel like I know a lot of Israeli people that lived in France for a really long time. A lot.
And I knew
a lot.
And
I mean like three.
But in the ratio of people you know who are either Israeli or French, that's probably like in a higher number for you. I there's a lot of Portuguese in France also. Like there's a big.
It's a romance language.
Yeah. Okay, great. So British, Brazilian. What's your third?
Oh, a third one. Jeez. Let's go with. Oh. I do love a Southern accent too.
Okay, great.
American Southern accent, but also like not the kind that you would expect. I just don't even know what kind of Southern accent I'm thinking about, but like I do like the Southern accent.
Okay,
too.
I'll keep it.
I used to have a Southern accent a little bit.
You used to have one from living in Las Vegas?
No, before I was in Vegas.
What a twist! I don't have time for this twist. what a terrible host. Next category. Next category. The next category is three foods that in this reality you, for one reason or another, you know, you can't have a ton of it. Either it's fattening or it's maybe like you're killing animals that you don't want to kill. Or it's something that you've had, but that you can't get readily in, you know, in the place that you live now. Three things that we're going to hand over to you that you can have in perpetuity with zero ramifications.
Wow. Steak. Specifically like prime rib. Cooked by a master griller all the time.
Master griller.
Sushi?
Yep.
Big sushi fan. Fish, raw fish is tricky in general.
Indeed.
But if there's no ramifications, nummy, 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 nummy.
Indeed.
And lastly, but definitely not least, cannolis.
Oh, wonderful. Okay, great. This next category is three people with whom you would like to have sexy to romantic times with, or a long-term companionship with in this alternate universe. It can be a character from a book, a movie, a TV character, a comic book character. The sky's the limit. Living or dead, it's wide open. Three.
I love that you said sexy romantic times.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure where that comes from inside of me, but it's not good.
I think it's the sex ed teacher having to awkwardly tell this to tweens inside of
that's
you.
Right.
It's like, sometimes sexy romantic times when you like someone and everyone has said yes. Sexy romantic times can happen,
that's right.
Kids. Three people I like to have sexy romantic times with. Mm. Interesting. They could be people from fiction as well.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. I have a major crush on this actress. Her name's Indira Varma.
Oh, I also have a crush on her.
Did you see This Way Up, Aisling B's new show?
No.
Ooh, you gotta watch
but
that.
You gotta watch that.
Speaking of Irish accents,
I got to watch it, and I always love her. And she was in this movie called Kama Sutra a long time ago.
Well, that was kind of the movie that made her.
See, yeah, yeah.
She's a very attractive woman.
Yes.
And seems to, I hate to say that, you know, like a fine wine gets better with age. It's such a weird thing to say.
It is true.
Yes, it is true. Then who else? Wow. Sexy times.
Thank you for making me have to hear my own words back to me to be ashamed of.
Yes, Rogue from X-Men, not Anna Paquin's version. Rogue from X-Men on a day where her powers of drainage do not work.
Great. I love
where she gets a free pass and she gonna tear up that ass.
That's right.
Because Rogue would go rogue.
Yes.
Am I right?
I couldn't agree more.
She doesn't get to do this, so I would love to be a guinea pig for that.
Great.
And when I say Rogue, I mean the depiction of Rogue from the early 90s Fox cartoon series. I don't know if it was on Fox where you grew up, where anyone else grew up, but the X-Men cartoon from the 90s.
Great.
Let me think. But a real version, which kind of, I guess, looks a little bit more like Julianne Moore in my head than I think I want to admit.
Okay.
Then who else? Who else? Sexy times from history. Josephine Baker.
Wonderful.
I think that's it.
Okay, great. That leads me into our time travel question. Three places in time, place and time that you would like to either, you know, be, you're going to be in like a safety bubble if one is needed, but you can either sort of bear witness to something, you know, solve a mystery, or just, you know, get that era and place all over you. Three.
Harlem Renaissance. Is one of my favorite eras. I always kind of have this, my dumb little spiritualist version of myself. I'm like, whatever era you were obsessed with, you were probably there, bro.
Yeah, bro. I love it.
So Harlem Renaissance, I would have loved to have seen like Duke Ellington play for real.
Oh, yeah.
Jazz greats, you know, play for real, to be able to walk into a place where people like Langston Hughes and, you know, Zora Neale Hurston and, you know, Louis Armstrong are hanging out. Then I am strangely very much into Victorian England.
Great. Let's get some creepy dolls and some creepy bassinets for you straight away.
Well, I would be very curious to, I would love to solve who Jack
the
Ripper
was. I was hoping you'd say that.
I would love to find out that it was the queen the entire time.
Wonderful.
Who has a really sick fetish for watching people be dismembered. This is just historical fiction I made up right now.
I love it, and I just want to remind people that in the not amazing movie From Hell about Jack the Ripper, I do believe that Jack the Ripper turned out to be none other than the narrator of The Woman in White.
Oh, good God. That was the Hughes Brothers, wasn't it?
I'm not sure.
It's like it's a comic book, Johnny Depp. That's all I remember. I never saw it. Good place for a musical, too. Oh, yeah. Oh, they did that Jekyll and Hyde, right? Gross. So Victorian England, and then where else would I like to be? I am really curious about what it would have been like to live in China after the fall of, I guess, the empires. I'm still learning about Chinese history, but it seems like there was a very long period where the triads, who are, you know, were essentially like royalty.
Yeah.
Like some of these, there are certain quote unquote criminal organizations that have been around longer than governments.
Yeah, for sure.
And so, and this is a period in Chinese history where the consolidation of power under those gangs started, where those gangs were kind of born out of. Gangs. I don't even know if I can call them gangs. I say organizations.
Yeah.
I'd be interested to witness what it would be like to live in China at that time. It seems like a horrifying time.
Yeah. Let's
check
it out.
As horrifying as Victorian
Let's
England.
Check it out. I'm
safe the entire time.
You're
so
totally
cool.
Safe. Exactly. This is the time. Okay. The second to last category, you are, for as long as I've known you, and it's been many, many years, you cut a wonderful jib. You always look fantastic. You wear clothing very well. I am going to give you the opportunity to take any style from any era, time, place, country, anything, can include, again, like comic book characters, but three styles that we're going to give you the ability to rock. All of them are totally comfortable. It's all the same, no matter what it looks like on the outside. And no one is going to think it's preposterous. It's just like all you.
Oh, that's dope. Well, first of all, thank you for the compliment, Janet. I appreciate
My
that.
Sincere pleasure. I've never sounded less sincere, but yet been utterly sincere.
First, I think I'm going to have to go with an entire home full of whatever anyone was wearing in the film Black Panther. All of it is mine forever and ever. Amen.
Wait, what movie?
Just Black Panther.
Oh, Black Panther. Oh, God, yeah. Absolutely.
But not necessarily the Black Panther outfit, but like what T'Challa looked like when he was just strolling around the palace.
The makeup and wardrobe and hair for that movie. I think my hope is that people will be talking about that for years and years and years to come. It was so special.
Well, I think they will, and a lot of it has to do with a woman named Ruth E. Carter, who I believe won an Oscar, and she has also designed a lot of my favorite movies, including Meteor Man. And a lot of Spike Lee's early stuff.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah, exactly. Then I really think there's something kind of dope about Restoration England. Like the freaking long petticoat and the buckled shoes and the giant powdered wig.
Frilly,
sometimes the
frilly,
face
great.
Painted in, you walk with a cane and you say things like, yes, madam, might I have a spot of tear?
Yeah.
Stuff like that. And you are, and to be as effeminate as possible is part of the thing.
Love it.
That's a pretty dope look. So combine that with Afrofuturism, and that's how you'll see me dressing when this pandemic is over. And then lastly, definitely not leastly, kilts for days. No, not really. I would like to wear, like, I guess, it's not really an outfit, though, but it would be, like, basically, like, mech. Like a mech. Like,
oh, okay.
Like, like a robot suit that is just like, maybe even the Iron Man suit.
Yeah.
That would probably be, you know, the Tony Stark, the Mark, you know, whatever Mark of Iron Man is the best for me. Just being able to go kiss, and turn that
absolutely
on.
That's completely great. I love it. Okay, final category for you. I'm going to shout out your sci-fi show, which I had the pleasure of doing, The Great Debate, and for the sci-fi fans, say three sci-fi worlds that we're going to allow you to pop into. And it can, you know, that can mean like Battlestar Galactica, the show, but it can also mean, you know, Arthur C. Clarke's book 2001, like whatever you want. Three three sci-fi universes that you can jump into.
Ooh, three science fiction universes. Well, both Battlestar and The Expanse are shows that I love, but those would be horrifying universes to actually have to exist in.
I'm afraid you may be
right. But I think there's something interesting. I think the Star Wars universe is infinitely fascinating.
Great.
I would love to be in the Star Wars universe, but somewhere safe. Mm-hmm. Seems like a lot of people are getting killed in that universe.
Not you though.
Not me. Another sci-fi universe. I think there's something very interesting about the world of Judge Dredd.
Mm-hmm.
It's like almost in my brain, it's like Akira and Judge Dredd and Ghost in the Shell mixed together into like a, you know, like a weird future mega city kind of feel.
I get it.
Or a little Blade Runner, you know, at the same time.
Yeah. I'm not going to let you throw Blade Runner in there. I'm just getting into the mashup that we just talked about. Yeah. But if you want to pick Blade Runner as your next one and final one, I'm just saying, you can.
Nah.
That's right. You're not going to.
And then what's another interesting world to live in? I guess the world of Galaxy Quest. I think No, Serenity.
There it is.
Firefly, not Serenity.
There it is. Okay. Great. I'm excited to see your version of like the space swashbuckler smuggler as well. That's going to be a fun look for me to enjoy.
Dang right.
Okay, pick a number between 1 and 5.
3.
Okay. While I use that number to do the most rudimentary of maths, could you please tell people where they can find you, what they should be listening to, paying attention to, vis-a-vis you and your wonderful work?
Well, my name is Baron, and I'm here to say you can find my work in various ways. I'm on TV and the internet, too. All right, I'm sorry. yes, Great Debate, Thursdays on Sci-Fi. Yes, we had the inimitable Janet Varney on, and we have a ton of great guests on having funny talks about dumb stuff. Then also, obviously, Grace and Frankie, which is out there on Netflix. You can continue to enjoy as much of that as you want. Myself and my good friend Open Mike Eagle did a show called Call and Response, which is a community meeting. It's like a town hall with a bunch of interesting, smart people, and that can be found on both Funny or Die and Blavity. And then, I have a horror film that I directed that's on Shudder. It's an anthology film called Scare Package.
Ooh, I didn't know about this. I'm writing it down right now.
I'm going to text it to
you. Oh, good. Okay, good.
After we get off.
Thank you. Okay, I have your results.
Well, I'm scared.
I'm excited. We're all over the place with this. Just all over the place. Sometimes things like sort of align so that there's a theme that emerges. I'm excited at the lack of a theme, but maybe you'll find a theme where I didn't see one. First of all, I want to congratulate you. I'm just gonna roll out the really great news first. I want you to know that you can have as much cannoli as there are stars in the sky. Just endless guilt-free cannoli for days. So congratulations again on your cannoli. I want to further congratulate you on your beautiful getaway home in Ghana. I guess, an opera. And that, I think, you got me very excited about wanting to go there. So I feel like this is a win for me as well. I want to also congratulate you on your ability to travel back to see the fall of the triad / empire of ancient China.
The rise of the triad.
I'm sorry, the rise of the triad and the fall of the empire. I, turns out, don't give myself very much room to write when I'm doing this game. I am very excited about, first of all, the fact that you're going to be able to fly everywhere if you want to, because you're going to have this mech suit. Is very exciting indeed. So I'm presumably you're going to be taking that to the house in Ghana to whatever the wherever you go to feast on cannoli. You are going to be doing a phenomenal job in a production of Raisin in the Sun as young Walter. You may also jump into the world of Firefly at will. So a lot of humor and adventure there that I'm excited about for you. You have a beautiful, when you want to use it, American Southern accent, whatever that comes to mean to you. And you have a relationship with the stunning and brilliant Josephine Baker.
Ooh.
That's a lot going on, right? I mean, that's just all over the place. You know what I mean? Like, because if you had gotten,
what a wonderful world.
Yeah, because if you had gotten like the place in Ireland and the British accent and the Victorian Empire, you know, the Victorian England visit with like Restoration England, like we could have gotten everything kind of pigeonholed into one sort of theme. And I like that this is just everywhere. It's everywhere.
I'm all over the place. Yeah. That's why the Netflix algorithm cannot figure me out.
That's
they're
right.
constantly, what do you like? You know, most of the time it's like,
who are you?
This, but they're like, who are you?
I think that's a tremendous compliment. I think that's a tremendous compliment to you. I have enjoyed our talk so much. The last thing we do on the podcast when it is summer is I invite you to spontaneously sing, if you know it and can think of any part of it, Don Henley's Boys of Summer, or any other snippet of a song that speaks summer to you in some way. Boom, boom, boom. Boom, boom, boom. Boom, boom, boom.
I can't stand you. That's the squash, the squish. I can't even do it. That's the sky. That's the sad. He's just scatting it. That's the sea. Yeah. That's the sad. That's the squish. That's the sad. That's how it sounds in my head.
I think, believe it or not, you really elevated that song. I'm extremely pleased.
I'm literally going to blast it the moment I get
off with you. I have loved this. Thank you so much for doing the podcast, my friend Baron Vaughn.
Yes.
And everybody check out all the various and sundry wonderful things that you can enjoy of Baron's. And I will talk to you next time on the podcast. The show is recorded by me and edited by Julian Burrell. And as always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.